I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, talk about election interference. The Washington State Bar Association is circling the wagons around Bob Ferguson. Plus, King County Executive Dow Constantine gives a completely unhinged State of the County address. And
my fellow New Yorkers,
New York City Mayor Eric Adams shows his fellow Democrats what it looks like to take a stand against anti-Semitism. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I broke some news on social media last night that has everyone in a flutter, at least people with common sense in a flutter, and understandably so. As you know, Attorney General Bob Ferguson asked the Secretary of State to break the law on his behalf. He did it in a letter, he did it over the phone, and he did it publicly in front of news cameras. Here's a clip.
One of these Bob Fergusons will appear second on the ballot. The other will appeal third on the ballot, and I appear number 13 on the ballot. So we're asking the Secretary of State to either move my name up, sort of second essentially, above those two, or move them down below me.
Yeah, so Bob Ferguson, when two other Bob Fergusons got in the race, thankfully they got out of the race, which I've been clear all along. I didn't think it was a particularly good stunt. He said, well, then now that's not fair to me. So I want the Secretary of State of my own political party, Steve Hobbs, to break election law to advantage me. Bottom line, very clear. Did it in front of news cameras again. His attorney for his election campaign for governor put it in a letter. And it wasn't a request. It wasn't, please do, you know, consider doing this, Steve Hobbs. It was a demand. It was a demand letter that Secretary of State Steve Hobbs give him special treatment on that, among a list of other demands and things he wanted. And when that didn't work, when the letter didn't work, he called him up as the Attorney General, as the state's chief law enforcer. And he said, hey, Steve Hobbs, you've got to rearrange the order on the ballot for me. Who cares if it's unfair to everyone else? And Steve Hobbs says, I can't do that. And what did Bob Ferguson say back, according to leaked audio? He said, bullshit, you can push the envelope. If Bob Ferguson were a Republican in this state, that would have been over, his campaign would have been over. That would have been a campaign ender for him. If he had been a Republican, because what would Democrats have said? Election interference. Election interference. Right? Am I wrong? I don't even need to ask you. No, I'm not wrong. I'm right. So Mark Mullett, who's a moderate, reasonable Democrat, he was upset about it too. He called a spade, and yes, he's running against Bob Ferguson to be governor, but he saw what the rest of us with common sense and who aren't blinded by ideology saw, which was the state's chief law enforcer trying to get the rules broken, the laws broken on his behalf. So Senator Mark Mullett filed a complaint with the Washington State Bar, and that's sort of where the story had been up to this point. Until last night, I was given the response to the Mark Mullett campaign from the Washington State Bar Association. They sent a letter yesterday to both the Mullett campaign and the Ferguson campaign. And this is what that letter said. We're not going to do anything about it until after the election. We're not going to do anything about it until after the election. That's what the letter said in a nutshell. I will read from it for you. So it talks about the grievance process, how it's governed by Washington Supreme Court's rules for enforcement of lawyer conduct. Because again, Bob Ferguson's a lawyer. So this complaint with the Bar Association is essentially meant to determine whether what he did was so egregious, he should either be sanctioned or he should lose his ability to practice law. So what the Washington State Bar Association's Office of Disciplinary Counsel says in this letter is that they can defer an investigation into allegations under a couple circumstances. One, if it appears that the allegations are related to pending civil or criminal litigation, so then they can defer it until a criminal investigation, for instance, is complete. Or, quote, for other good cause, if it appears the deferral will not endanger the public. Therefore, they write, we believe the best course of action at this time is to defer the investigation on this matter because of the ongoing election campaign. In black and white, we're deferring an investigation into the state's chief law enforcer, an investigation into accusations of serious misconduct because of the ongoing election campaign. And they say further to the Mullet campaign, please inform us when the election results are finally certified, and we will consider investigating the grievance. So once it's signed, sealed, and delivered in favor of Bob Ferguson, probably in their belief, then we will consider investigating the complaint. So you want to wait until after the election is final and the results are final, until you look into whether the front runners, the attorney general, asked the Secretary of State to break the law. If that's not a two-tiered system of justice, I don't know what it is. And again, I said, feel free to argue this point. I think it's indisputable. If Bob Ferguson in the state of Washington had been a Republican candidate for governor and had called the Secretary of State and asked him to break the law to benefit his campaign, telling him when he was told, no, bullshit, you can push the envelope, that would be a campaign ender for a Republican in Washington state. Campaign ender. But for Bob Ferguson, that's a scandal that, as far as the mainstream media is concerned, wasn't really worth covering all that much. Blowed over pretty quickly. In a matter of days. A couple media outlets talked about it. And then everyone moved on. Not everyone, not us. Does it really have to come down to a biased political commentator, because that's what I am, who's endorsed Bob Ferguson's opponent, to point this stuff out? And I hate to say it like this. It matters more. The messenger on this stuff matters. And as much as, yeah, people like our show, we have, I think, a pretty good audience that spans the ideological spectrum. I'm not saying what I say doesn't matter. I do think it can make a difference in things. But on this, it should be coming from the mainstream media. It should be coming from journalists. It should be coming from the Seattle Times, King 5, Cairo 7, Como 4, Fox 13. This is a scandal that should not have died down by now. And now we've got a scandal on top of a scandal with Bobby's buddies in the Bar Association circling the wagons around him, hoping, oh, please, let him be governor so he can appoint me to something. Oh, please. How disgusting is that? Two tiers of justice. I stole this, the headline for today's show, Different Standards, from someone on the internet. I said, I'm stealing that. Because whenever there's this moral hypocrisy, I don't know who this person is, it's just a random person on X. They always put, oh yeah, Brandy, but that's different. Capital D, parentheses, different. Yeah, there are different standards. The standards for the Democrats in this state and the standards for the rest of us. Absolutely absurd. I happen to know that the Mullet campaign is going to ask, they have 45 days to send in a written request for review of the decision to defer. So I imagine the Mullet campaign won't wait 45 days to do that, because that would take us up to the primary election. So they can ask for this to be reconsidered and for an investigation to be done more quickly, which it ought to. And look, I get it that we talked about lawfare. And you look at the lawfare against Donald Trump and like, oh, we got to get this. We got to get him prosecuted and maybe in prison before it comes time for the election. And I understand that there are always concerns about lawfare and the legal system being used to influence the outcome of our elections. But if there is a legitimate case to be brought, You're bringing it or investigating it on a legitimate timeline. When you're talking about an elected official, there really is no good time to do something like this. So you're telling me it's a better time if Bob Ferguson's the governor-elect in November? That's the better time for the public to investigate whether he should be disbarred or sanctioned? Man, seems like before people vote for him, that's the very best time and in the best interest of the public. So it's just wild stuff. I'm going to be reaching out to the Washington State Bar Association because, again, I just got this letter last night. I put it out on social media. The reaction has been pretty swift that this just seems off. So one thing I want to know from the Washington State Bar Association, which we'll follow up with them on today, is give me some other circumstances in the last couple years where you've deferred an investigation, and what besides an ongoing criminal matter, because that makes sense to me. If someone who's a lawyer did something, like let's say where they were arrested for domestic violence and they've got a case going on, yeah, you wait until that case is completed to see if they're found innocent or guilty, and then you decide whether to take action against their license to practice law. That's a no-brainer. So are there other examples they can provide us of reasons they've deferred investigations other than an ongoing criminal or civil matter? Let's see if they can provide us with some examples, or is this truly, truly, truly special treatment for their buddy Bob? Wild stuff. All right, speaking of the legal system and lawsuits, we have been following, and really even long before my show, Nicole and Dory Monson, this was a story they owned years ago. Gosh, this has been going on for a couple years now, where a poor Townsend woman, 80 years old, one of her joys in life is swimming at the YMCA pool in Port Townsend. You know, like, come on. I mean, Nicole goes swimming at the pool. She's not 80, but she does exercises like an 80-year-old. Love what it. A simple joy in life, right?
I love the water.
Well, I love the water, too. That's true. I just don't do water aerobics in the water.
I know.
Yeah. So, simple joy for an 80-year-old woman. Hey, I like to go to the YMCA. I've got friends there. I've been doing this for years. I've been swimming. At the pool at the YMCA. Until one day, she's in the women's locker room, as she should be. There's women in there showering. They're naked, you know, women's locker room. And a biological man comes in, a YMCA employee, who's, I guess, a transgender woman, but a biological man, very clearly so, and is in there with children and with women in the locker room naked. And Julie Jaman, this 80-year-old woman's like, hey, what are you doing in here, essentially? And she had an issue with it. And without even talking to her, talking through like, hey, this is state law, we have to accommodate transgender individuals, you know, maybe we can find a different, like a private space for you if you're not comfortable with that. Nope, YMCA revoked her membership, banned her for life. So that happened. It was all over the news. And then we had Julie on the show a couple months ago because her and her attorneys had filed a claim with the city of Port Townsend, which basically YMCA operates this pool through the city. So it's kind of a city-owned pool. And the YMCA seeking damages, seeking an apology, and letting Julie go swimming again. Those were the things. And so we know that a claim is a precursor to a lawsuit. So they tried that route first, thought, okay, maybe everybody's come to their senses and they're willing to work through this and kind of, settle this before we go to a full-blown federal civil rights lawsuit. But no, Port Townsend, YMCA, they are not interested. So yesterday, a lawsuit was filed on behalf of Julie Jaman. Julie and her attorney, Eric Sell, joined us to talk about it. Give me an update on what has happened since the last time we had you both on from a legal perspective. I know there was a demand letter, so now we're going full-blown lawsuit.
Right. Well, we didn't ever actually hear from the city of Port Townsend in response to our demand letter. So apparently they wanted this to escalate into a federal lawsuit, even though it didn't need to. The YMCA at least gave us the courtesy to respond, but they're not interested in settling either. And I think this is just another example of their commitment to this radical ideology as opposed to common sense, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah. And when you say YMCA responded, but they didn't seem interested in settling, was there anything else in their response that you could characterize for us?
We heard from their lawyer. They said, you know, they don't really have anything else to add other than what's been discussed, you know, out in the world over the last 2 years regarding what happened to Julie, which is really unfortunate. I mean, this is a very simple matter of resolving this, compensating Julie for the harm that they caused and allowing her back into the pool. But they're apparently not interested in doing that. They'd much rather fight this out in court and spend a bunch of money on lawyers, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah, Julie, you were seeking, I think, $350,000, but also just an apology and like, hey, let me swim at the pool again. Are you surprised that they weren't willing to at least give you, you know, an apology and let you come back?
We're 2 years into this, and I am no longer surprised by almost anything. It's been a stunning experience.
Yeah, I mean, for you personally, you know, going into now taking it into the realm of a lawsuit, how confident are you in your legal counsel? And how confident are you that you have a good case?
What they're approaching about my right to speak and the rights of women and children to be safe, I have absolutely no doubt that any rational person would vote in the affirmative for both things.
Yeah.
We once had these rights. It appears that there is a big attempt to try and take them away. And there is nothing for it but to go to the courts. And I'm very confident about what they're going to see and hear.
And Julie, when this first happened, you know, and it first went in the media, you were just vilified by some people out there where you live. And then there was kind of a lull. And then when the claim issue came up, you know, trying to seek damages, then it was back in the news again. How has the vitriol that had been directed at you, has it waned at all?
I would say that it has. I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm wondering if possibly the city and possibly the Y have been advised to tone themselves down a little bit, along with city council. The more of their past behavior, that if they were to continue with that, it seems to me they would just be digging themselves in deeper and deeper. It is a stunning experience to read the exchanges between various council members and the publics and local church people, local officials of all sorts. You just wouldn't believe what this little community is full of.
Unfortunately, I would believe it. Unfortunately, I do believe it. Yeah. Eric, so she's confident in your counsel, obviously. Tell us about the underpinnings of the case.
Right. Well, as we outlined in our demand letter and in the complaint, and this is a very straightforward violation of Julie's First Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution. The YMCA is a state actor here, a government actor here. I know they're a nonprofit, but they're managing a city pool. This is government property. The city has outsourced the management of this community pool to the YMCA. So the YMCA must adhere to the Constitution, and they didn't do that here. This is well-established case law all the way up to the Supreme Court that private nonprofits like the YMCA can be considered government actors in situations like this, and so therefore they must comply with the First Amendment, and they didn't do that. And this is a pretty obvious violation of the First Amendment here. So we feel very confident in our legal theory here, and that the YMCA and the City of Port Townsend will both be on the hook for what they did to Julie for violating her constitutional rights. And then in addition to that, there's also, as Julie discussed, the defamatory statements that certain individuals within city government made about her publicly, and that the city itself made about her in an official Q&A that it posted on its website that falsely labeled Julie as someone who had a pattern of code of conduct violations at the pool, which just isn't true. And it painted Julie in a false light and made her out to be this bigoted, problematic person. And all of this is false, and it appears to us to have been done in an attempt to justify this totally ridiculous, over-the-top, irrational decision to completely ban her for life from the pool. This is just, it blows my mind to think that this had to escalate up to this level, to a federal lawsuit, when it could have been a very straightforward, you know, act to resolve this by explaining what the pool policy is to Julie. And instead, they decided to retaliate against her, ban her, make false statements about her, all for political and ideological reasons.
Yeah. Welcome to Washington State. Eric, is the Center for American Liberty, are you doing this pro bono?
Yes, we are. We are representing Julie pro bono. We do this. The way we're able to do this is because of generous gifts from donors. If they're interested in supporting Julie's case, they can go to our website, libertycenter.org, and donate to Julie's cause.
Awesome. Thank you guys for doing that. I mean, whenever we have cases like this and people, we had one this week that was just ridiculous and attorneys stepping up to try to do what's right. Because that's the horrifying thing, right? For private citizens who've been wronged in this way. It's like, well, I can't, how am I going to sue someone? How am I going to afford to sue someone over it? What do I do? So I appreciate what you're doing here. Julie, I want to end with this. You know, obviously you guys have your demands, you know, financial compensation, you want to be able to swim at the pool again and you want them to apologize. But whenever we look at cases like this, you look at what kind of precedents is going to set elsewhere. I guess, is there any larger thing you hope would come away from this if your lawsuit is successful?
The upside of all of this is just how much light has been cast into this particular case and what happened to me, because women have become more and more aware of the fact that they have lost their rights to speak and to be safe and have privacy. We assume these things. And for a long time, of course, you know, we've had to fight as second-class people in this culture. We've had to fight for all of them, and we have had them. And now they have been co-opted by this new ideology secretly. This has not been a grassroots movement. This is something that has come down, and we are discovering that we have lost our rights. I'm speaking up because I'm hoping this helps women.
And I would just ask you, because I'm not sure I've asked you this before, if you're successful, you know, you can't, through this lawsuit, force the YMCA not to allow, I don't think so, right, Eric, transgender individuals in the women's bathroom? That's not part of this lawsuit, asking them to change their policy, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that policy it's not settled that that's a lawful policy, that the state, I mean, this is a state regulation that's telling businesses, organizations like the Y, that they have to have policies like this. It's not settled that that is a lawful policy, but it's also a difficult legal challenge to bring. And we thought right now it was first and foremost most important to get Julie back in the pool and hold the Y and the city accountable for the violation of her First Amendment rights, her speech rights.
So I asked that, Julie, just to ask, if you win and you get to go swimming at the Y again, you're back in the women's locker room, there's no telling that you won't again have a biological male who's in the women's locker room with you, or while women are showering, or while young girls are in there. How will you confront that situation?
If such a win occurred, I think that opens an opportunity to the city and to the Y and to all kinds of organizations in this community to come together to figure out how to make that old facility work for us and continue to work for us through training the staff, through getting good signage, through adapting spaces so that, in fact, women and children can shower and change in privacy, all within the legal frameworks that are presented to us. This is just an opportunity to be creative and get with the program.
That sounds like common sense, Julie. I mean, maybe have an area where you can go if you're not comfortable with it. So, well, best of luck, and please keep us updated. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Is it really asking so much? Really? She's not saying no transgender people in the pool. She's saying, hey, maybe, you know, they need to communicate on their policies, and we should have an area where women or children who aren't comfortable with a biological man being in an area where they're sometimes nude can have an area where they can go. Some sort of, you know, single stall situation outside the women's locker room. I don't understand why someone like Julie, who's asking for something so reasonable, would be so vilified. Poor Townsend, I know not all of you are crazy, but I'm disappointed just generally in the tone about Julie Jaman, who's in her 80s, wants to go back to the pool and swim. Let the damn woman swim. Crazy. But we're looking forward. Thank you again to the Center for American Liberty, her attorney, Eric Sell, for taking this case on pro bono, because it could have wider ranging implications if they are successful. Coming up next, King County Executive Dow Constantine gave a completely unhinged State of the County address that Nicole and I have been laughing about all morning. So we'll play you some of our favorite sound bites. First, if you're in the market to sell your home in 2024, reach out to our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a really long time in this market. market. He knows the market like the back of his hand. Our friends Bryce and Carla, who watch the Undivided podcast, they went to sell their home in Bellevue in January so they could move and retire in Florida. Obviously, they were a little concerned. You know, the market wasn't doing great in January, but they did what Wes told them to do and were very happy with the results.
I'm just very detail-oriented and never put down our property because you could hear I-90 from our property, and it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was, you know? And others were like, oh, what is going? We're gonna have to put a water feature on that deck, because that noise. And I'm like, sorry.
Yeah, so they were really happy with Wes, and they were happy with the outcome. They sold their home in 7 days for over list price, even the way the market was in January. Now they're just loving life in Florida. So if you're in the market to sell your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You can start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. If you ever wondered, which I'm sure you do often, how things got so screwed up in Seattle, King County, and across Washington State, it's because of leaders like Dow Constantine, who has been the King County executive for 4 terms. I only thank God he didn't run for governor, although I don't know what he has his mind set on next. The reason why people like Dow Constantine have contributed to the downfall of a once great city, a once great county, and a once great state is because they live in la-la land. They live in a little imaginary universe where they pretend that they're doing a good job, and they're really not. And not only do they lie to themselves, they lie to all of us. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Whoop. All right. Dow Constantine gave his 7 billionth state of the county address for King County. And man, there were some whoppers in it. Nicole was playing for, I was doing my makeup this morning, and she was playing the speech next to me. And I was like, mouth wide open, could not believe. I'm like, who believes this stuff? Does he believe this? Does he actually believe the stuff that comes out of his mouth? So we've picked our least favorite sound bites to go through with all of you. One of them is actually stunning, truly stunning. And dangerous. I'm laughing about it, but truly stunning and dangerous. But let's start here. He says that, man, when they're not on the right path, they are totally willing to admit when they're wrong.
Together, we seek to transform how government operates, solving problems in innovative ways, effectively, efficiently. This, rather than political theater, is how we best deliver needed services and make a real impact in the lives of our residents. We acknowledge it when we stumble, when mistakes are made, and we stick to the path of continuous improvement.
What? So first of all, you acknowledge when mistakes are made, but you always stick to the path. But when one time, you tell me one time you've acknowledged when you've made a mistake as the King County executive. Nicole, you're going to follow up with his office. One time, give me one example.
I'm sure they'll get right back to
me. I'm sure. Give me one example of when you've had the humility to admit that you made a mistake. And also, when did you ever solve a problem in an innovative way? Ask them that too. Can you give me an example of a problem you've solved in an innovative way? So that's funny, right? Now, this next little bit isn't funny. It's absolutely terrifying. Dow Constantine telling an absolute, outright lie on an issue that is killing people.
One widely held belief is that behavioral health issues like untreated mental health or substance use disorders are root causes of the homelessness crisis that we see all around us. This is wrong. University of Washington researcher Greg Colburn has shown that the cause of the homelessness phenomenon is not individual challenges, but a housing market failure. One factor distinguishing places with high homelessness from places with low homelessness is not the prevalence of addiction or untreated mental health problems or the availability of public assistance or the weather or even poverty. The one critical difference is whether there are enough housing units to match the number of people who need homes. If not, somebody, usually the person with the least money or the greatest burdens, loses out and ends up on the streets.
I give up. I cannot believe that. I mean, I can, but at this point, it's a universally accepted reality, near universally accepted reality, that people aren't living in filth and squalor with needles in their arm on our streets because there just weren't enough houses to go around. And this is even more unhinged than the usual line of this is a housing crisis. Because what he says is it's not even because of poverty. It's because, think of how simplistic his mind is. We have this many homes. Then there are this many people. And the people who don't get into these homes, the only thing left for them to do is sleep on the streets in a tent. No, if you can't find a home, or you can't afford a home, you go somewhere else where you can find a home, where you can find a place to rent, where you can afford a place to rent. You don't pitch a tent in a city park and start injecting heroin or fentanyl in between your toesies. How is this? That is the man who's in charge of King County and has been for more than a decade. I don't know how to properly articulate how unhinged and dangerous and sad and scary that is to continue to push that narrative. The first thing Nicole and I did is we got to reach out to Andrea. I am dying to hear how Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle would react to that sentiment. You need to spend all of 10 seconds in a homeless camp actually trying to talk to people who are homeless, Dow, to find out that they're either mentally ill, drug addicted, or both. They didn't move to Seattle one day trying to buy a house. Oh, can't find a house. I guess I'll pitch a tent in Denny Park. For the love of God, you moron. I don't like to name call on the show, but you absolute asshat. People are dying. And your lack of willingness to assess, what have I said over and over? What have I said over and over? You cannot trust someone to solve a problem that they refuse to properly identify. Dow Constantine could try to solve homelessness for 150 years, and he would never be able to do it because he's solving for the wrong problem. Intentionally. Intentionally. How insane is that? Oh, we're not done yet. Let's see. He's bragging about some of the work they've done related to addiction.
In January, we opened a new 24/7 hotline thanks to a partnership with UW Medicine, Public Health, and DCHS. Anyone can now call to get a prescription to treat opioid use disorder. In its first 4 months, the hotline provided 200 prescriptions. We also distributed more than 38,000 life-saving naloxone kits and almost 30,000 test strips just in the first quarter of this year.
That's, you're bragging about that? Let me do the math again. So in the first quarter of this year, only 200 people took you up on the opportunity to get a drug to help wean them off their addiction. 200 people. Like, good, great. 200 is great. I'd rather have 200 than zero who want to take a medication to help deal with their substance abuse issue, to help fight it and get past it. But compare that to 30,000 who wanted a free test strip to make sure their drugs were pure. Or 38,000 who knew they were going to keep doing drugs or their buddies were, so they wanted a naloxone kit so they could bring them back to life so then they could do drugs again. So success for you, Dow, is 200 people who took you up on an offer to get help fighting their drug addiction. 30,000 people who just wanted a test strip to make sure their drugs were pure, that they got what they thought they were getting from their drug dealer, and 38,000 people who are going to drug themselves to death, revive themselves, and then drug themselves to death again and do it all over. You guys, vote. You have to vote different. You have to vote different. We can't keep doing this. This is stupid. That's utter stupidity. That's utter stupidity. There is no ideology, there's no single issue that could justify continuing to vote for people like Dow Constantine over someone who has a brain and common sense. Wild stuff. Let's see, I think Nicole added this one too. Dow also just wants you to know, for the record, he is just a very, very righteous, brave leader of men.
But our work is not about the vision or the values or the planning. It is about summoning the courage to get difficult things done and to take that vision and make it real. A lot of folks do a lot of talking. We deliver.
Summon the courage to get difficult things done. Maybe he's talking to himself. Maybe he's like that. He's trying to amp himself up. Like, Dow, summon the courage to get difficult things done. It's only been 16 years, but you know, this is your year. This is your year. Can you play that cut one more time? I already forgot what he said at the end.
But our work is not about the vision or the values or the planning. It is about summoning the courage to get difficult things done and to take that vision and make it real. A lot of folks do a lot of talking. We deliver.
If you want to talk less, I'm game. If you want to talk less and focus on getting things done, I'm game. Because it's weird because you say that, like, hey, we don't talk, we deliver, we get difficult things done, but you've been the King County executive for, is it 16 years or is it all going on? Is he his fifth term or his fourth term? I think he's in his fifth or his fourth term. 16 years. Crime is worse. Homelessness is worse. Weird. Affordability is worse. Weird. Everything is worse. So who do we blame for that, Dow? Somebody said in the comments, it finally happened. Brandy's having a mental breakdown. I am. Because I can't believe that someone like that, that anyone listens to that and isn't just jaw, mouth agape with horror. I'm going to laugh. I'm going to joke about it because I'm doing a podcast. I got to keep you all entertained. But also, he's killing people. That mindset is killing people. That mindset is ruining what should be and what once was one of the most beautiful cities on the planet. And yet, because of what? Like, oh, Orange Man bad or something. We're like, yeah, let's double, triple, quadruple down on that. Let's keep going in that direction. Unhinged. Unhinged. Unbelievable. Unreal. Whatever other word that starts with UN that's bad. Dow Constantine. That's him. Nicole, thank you for listening to that speech. So I did not have to listen to the entire thing.
You know,
we could have gone all day.
We
could have gone all day.
I could have chopped a bunch up from that. And people clapping, give me a break.
No.
Do not clap for this nonsense. Yeah. Oh, like, yeah, you are brave, Dow.
I go back to, oh my God, I don't want to belabor the issue, but I must. Him saying that home... Okay, hold on.
I mean, he didn't even say it's part of the problem.
No,
it's a
lie.
It is the problem. That's a lie.
We're lying. Yeah, it's not drug abuse. It's not mental illness. It is literally, like, this is how simplistic. I just have to say it again. So he's saying, oh, we have 20 homes and 22 people. Mm-hmm. That means the only option is for those two other people to pitch a tent on the street.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
Never mind that all of the people have been offered not to live in tents, right, and to live somewhere else. Sure. Everyone has been offered that. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of getting them to take it up. So that's not true.
No,
it's just not true.
And I want to see the study. It is a lie.
It is absolutely a lie.
100%. And also, what you just said is reflected in the numbers he gave on substance mm-hmm. abuse, where we always say people don't want help. They're offered help. So then we have to have a way to force them into treatment, because now we're talking about a societal issue here. 200 people, if given, they have the free will, right? This is the system that's gauging free will. Nicole, can you play me? I'm sorry. I'm going to belabor this because this is insane.
Anyone can now call to get a prescription to treat opioid use disorder.
Anyone.
In its first 4 months, the hotline provided 200 prescriptions. We also distributed more than 38,000 life-saving naloxone kits and almost 30,000 test strips just in the first quarter of this year.
Again, so that's his own numbers. That's his own data that he's somehow proud of. But you're looking at what happens when you give drug addicts free will. These are the services we provide to you. It's like you get to choose door A, door B, or door C. Door A, you can get off drugs. 200 people go through door A. Door B, we'll give you a test strip just to make sure that you're not accidentally ingesting a lethal dose of fentanyl. 30,000 people go through door B. That's free will, right? Giving drug addicts free will. Door C, hey, like, you know, just take whatever drug you want, and if you die from it, this will bring you back to life to keep taking it. 38,000 people go through door C. That's what giving drug addicts free will and decriminalization and coddling them and giving them what they need and the circumstances to be able to continue to put deadly substances in their body, that's what that gets you. A bunch of people who go through doors B and C and who give door A the middle finger. Unreal, Dow. Unfit. That's another UN word. Unfit. Unhinged. Unbelievable. Unreal. Unlikable.
Really is.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
There's many words.
Wow. I know this show's called Undivided, but I refuse. I refuse to give him the benefit of the doubt anymore. Absolutely not. The only way we can truly be undivided is when we ignore the absolute lunacy and focus, be laser focused on the 80%, 70 maybe, 70 to 80% of people who have a brain who understand that what we're doing is not working. All right, coming up next, we're gonna dip outside of Washington State. A poor boy, along with all of his siblings, kicked out of a private school for giving a speech that they felt was too Trump-like.
He might not be poor if he's in a private school.
Wait, what?
He said a poor boy getting kicked out of a private school.
This poor boy was kicked out of a private school. We'll get to that coming up next. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. We all need insurance. Are you paying too much for insurance? Do you have the right insurance? If you're navigating the insurance industry on your own, you might not know the answer to those two questions. But First Mark Insurance, a wonderful local insurance broker, can help you get to the bottom of it and make sure that you're not spending more than you need to, especially in these economic times. We've had a lot of viewers of Undivided take the First Mark Challenge. Ben Bailey and his wife Leslie are two of them.
You know, it's good to, just like you would go in for an annual physical with your primary care physician. You know, you may not have anything wrong, but it's good just to kind of have that, you know, annual check-in. And I think that's what First Mark, you know, the service and the value that they really provide is it helps. It helps you have an understanding of your coverage.
Yeah. They save $1,500 a year, by the way, just by doing the First Mark Challenge, setting aside 1 hour of time. And they saved $1,500 a year. And now First Mark reevaluates their insurance every year for them so they don't have to do it themselves. I think that's awesome. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Schedule your First Mark Challenge today. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they've got your best interests in mind. Best interests. Really struggled through that one. All right. Now to national news. A kid in California was elected to the student council. And so he got to give a speech. Well, apparently his speech had a little too many shades of Orange Man Bad, and the school was simply not having it. So this is from the local NBC affiliate where this happened. And this is a Catholic school, so it's a private school. It says, California mother Hattie Rugels says her family was banned from attending a Catholic school after her son gave an election speech mirroring language used by former President Donald Trump. Rugels' son, Jimmy Hayward, little Jimmy, poor little Jimmy, was running for a position at St. Bonaventure Catholic School's Commissioner of Spirit and Patriotism. Okay, wait a second. So the position he was running for was St. Bonaventure Catholic School's Commissioner of Spirit and Patriotism. Okay, that's going to be very relevant here. School principal Mary Flock allegedly reviewed Hayward's election speech and said its contents needed to be edited. After making edits, Hayward was allegedly informed he wouldn't be allowed to speak because he had not removed the, quote, stuff about patriotism. in his speech, his acceptance speech, to become the commissioner of spirit and patriotism. So let's see what sort of horrible, unacceptable, patriotic stuff little Jimmy wrote, shall we? Okay. His speech said in part, "Many people recite the Pledge of Allegiance without understanding its meaning. If someone doesn't truly know what they are pledging to the United States of America, they might as well be reciting the lyrics to Shake It Off by Taylor Swift. I want to fix this so everyone understands the meaning of the Pledge of Allegiance. As the Commissioner of Patriotism, I would have the crucial task of creating ways to bring more patriotism to SBS. I love my country and I love Saint Bonaventure, but I want to strengthen our patriotism and school spirit. So accordingly, I, Jimmy Hayward, am running for Commissioner of Patriotism and School Spirit. I want to clarify that my ideas are not promises, but I can promise to make pep rallies great again. I will make the school spirit great again. I will make patriotism within SBS great again. And mostly, I will make SBS great again. Thank you, and God bless St. Bonaventure Catholic School." So apparently that little speech right there to be elected Commissioner of Patriotism was too patriotic. Went a little too far. Can't say great again in a sentence anymore. Completely banned. Donald Trump has ruined that for everyone. So not only did the school kick out little Jimmy, all of Jimmy's siblings are kicked out of the school too. This is the letter. "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Hayward, this letter is to inform you of a decision regarding your family's association with St. Bonaventure School. After careful consideration and thorough review of recent events, and with the support of the diocese, the decision has been made to terminate your family's enrollment from St. Bonaventure School for the next school year." That is the place that we have come to as a country. And here you thought only public schools were insane. Turns out some private schools are crazy too. All right, it is Thursday, so it's time to check in with my sister. They're getting some severe weather in Florida. I sure hope she's okay. Let's check in our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello. What another lovely week.
Yes, beautiful week here.
Yeah, here too, except there it's a little high water situation. What's going on?
We just got dumped on by a storm for the last like 3 days, just nonstop torrential rain. And that water has nowhere to go. So it just sits in the streets and piles up and piles up. And we've got cars floating downtown. And it's pretty bad. Even out in front of my house this morning, there was quite a bit of water in the street still. So.
Alligators swimming.
Yeah. They're loving it.
Climate change, Miranda. Climate change.
I guess.
So,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Russian warships getting a little too close to Florida for comfort.
Yeah, definitely too close. Last week, Moscow sent, I think it was 3 ships and a nuclear submarine to the Caribbean to do some like air and naval exercises down by Cuba. And on their way down, they got less than 30 miles away from the coast of South Florida. So the U.S. was like, ugh, and they sent a couple ships and airplanes to track them until they get kind of away from our shores a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't trust that, obviously. It was funny. I was reading this news article about a former KGB spy who was weighing in on it, like as an expert. And I'm like, where'd you find a former KGB spy to weigh in on this for your news story? But he was like, yeah, I would be worried, basically. If I were America, yeah. I would be worried. And I'm like, that's just such a weird news story. But
well, and when you read some of the articles, it's like Biden administration isn't concerned. I'm like, shouldn't they be, though? Yeah. Like
a little bit. I don't know. Somebody will tell me, some former Navy person, I'm sure, in the comments. I should have looked this up. But I don't know how many nautical miles then you're like in our territory, like that we would consider it an act of aggression or an act of war or something. I'm not sure, but
I've done a couple like fishing tournaments and you have to stay within U.S. boundary waters. Yeah. And I think we were out like a good 15 miles. Yeah. And he's like, I think we're getting pretty close to international waters. So I don't think it's like 60 miles or anything like that. But 30 is still a stone's throw, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Warship.
You can throw a stone 30 miles. Wow, I'd like to see that. No, some former Navy person will get in the comments and tell me what it actually is before, like what the buffer is. All right, yeah. Happening in Florida. I think it's funny because the Seattle Times also posted this. Florida law blocking treatment for transgender children thrown out by a federal judge. So a little bit of a blow to Ron DeSantis there and to common sense.
Yeah, and we talked about this when he had signed this law into action last year. I think it was in 2023. This law didn't just apply to like the youth, like to minors. It also put quite a few restrictions on treatment for adults too. Basically saying they couldn't get online treatment. They had to see like doctors, not just like nurse practitioners. There was quite a few restrictions in there. And the DeSantis office has issued a statement basically saying like it was like to throw it out was erroneous and they're going to appeal it and make sure, because they're like the Florida people voted through their elected officials for this to happen. Yeah. And so it's kind of like a slap in the face to Floridians in general that voted for these elected officials that support, you know, being a little bit more err on the side of caution when it comes to just allowing parents to take their kids to make these really life-changing decisions.
Yeah, I struggle with this issue a lot because obviously I'm in favor of limited government intervention. It's one of the reasons I'm pro-choice, but there are still caveats, right? I'm pro-choice up to fetal viability. And we also, it's very common in the medical field, there are standards for doctors, do no harm standards. We don't just allow it to be a free-for-all where doctors can, you know, Dr. Kevorkian anything they want. So, it's like, yeah, I'm limited government, but also we have to have reasonable guardrails on what is medically appropriate and life-altering surgeries for kids just ain't it. But as far as adults, like if you want to cut it off, cut it in, whatever you want to do, I just don't have an issue with that, frankly.
And I'm the same. I think it's one of the hardest parts about sitting in like an independent zone where you want less government. You want people to be able to like make decisions for themselves, but it gets a little bit iffy when you have people making decisions for children that, you know, I think I was like 25 before I even knew what kind of job I wanted to do with my life, let alone anything else. So I think like giving people time to like mature and stuff is important. But if you're really giving parents like the open door to like, go ahead, take your kids. I don't know. Like I don't think we've lived through this enough to know the good and the bad that comes out of it.
Well, it's like trans, what do they call it? Conversion therapy. You know how that was like acceptable back in the day. And now it's like, no, you can't force your kid into conversion therapy to get the gay out of them. Like, you know, so you kind of grow and you learn, right? And you put these guardrails on medicine that as a society we're going to follow. And this is one of those issues that for some reason our country has not put proper guardrails on it. I think it will. I think that'll come to be. But, you know, the adult thing is a totally separate issue. So, all right, Miranda, don't float away on us down there.
You're going to see me paddleboarding and kayaking in the streets if this continues.
Hey, that would be fun. Just watch out for the gators.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Florida, you get freedom, but you also get a little bit of flooding. If there's a state that's going to disappear because of climate change and rising sea levels, I mean, it is technically the Florida coast. The Fed, if you remember at the beginning of the year, they're like, oh, it's going to be rate cuts galore. There'll be so many rate cuts, you won't even know what to do with all of them. And then they came out yesterday and they're like, actually, yeah, there might be one, maybe none in 2024. We asked our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital to react.
I feel like this is the first time in probably about 2 years that I've heard a Fed meeting that actually made any sense. And the reason why I say that is one of the things that we said, when you have inflation at this at these levels and wage growth at these levels, you can't cut rates, right? But we also know that they can't really raise them either, because we've already sort of found that breaking point, meaning at this level of rates, unless you have an extremely stimulative or loose federal government, right, spending 6.5-7% deficits to GDP, that things are going to break. And we saw that last year with regional banks. So today actually made sense. And it's something that we've been saying that for a year and a half that they should do, which is, look, you can't raise. We all know that, right? So what do you need to do? you need to talk as if you're going to, or you need to talk as if you're not going to raise rates. You need to get the market to price in the fact that you're not going to cut rates, right? Which means you need valuations to come down. You need the froth to come out of the market before you actually cut. Because if you do cut when it's frothy, you're going to get inflation just ripping right back up the other side of it. And we were been frustrated for the last year and a half going, guys, you're not cutting, but you keep promising a cut, right? Which is the same thing. The market goes, oh, well, we got all these cuts coming. There's just no common sense. And we see it in government and bureaucracies all the time, where it's just, this is common sense, guys. If you can't raise and you can't cut, which is the position they're in right now, then convince everybody that you're not going to cut and that a rate raise is still on the table. And that's kind of the posture they've taken now. And it seems to be having kind of the desired effect. You're seeing inflation come back in line a little bit. Overall, I thought it was a positive. I thought they made sense, but kind of, you know, too little too late, in my opinion.
So what I'm kind of learning is if the Fed says it might do something or it's not going to do something, you can't take that at face value at all.
No, because and they've talked about this before. There's many different levels of Fed policy. If they can engender a change that they want to see happen without actually changing policy rates or taking action, we refer to it in the business as jawboning, right? That's what they're going to do. And we just thought that they were being incredibly stupid. Like it was, I don't know if it was just because of the last 15 years, but when inflation was ripping, they were promising rate cuts. And you're looking at them going, what are you guys doing, right? You say you're fighting inflation on one hand, then you're splashing money all over the economy to bail things out on the next hand, and then you're talking about the coming rate cuts. And you wonder why you can't get inflation under control. Like, remember, markets are always forward-looking, right? So everybody thinks markets are responding, and they can over the short term. But for the most part, markets are looking ahead 12 to 18 months. So if you tell me that rate cuts are on the way in 8 months, here goes inflation again, right? It's just going to go right back up. And watching them try to fumble that around for the last year and a half has been frustrating. But then today it seems like I said, I finally heard a sensible Fed meeting. So we'll see.
Yeah. But even if we can't, you know, trust what they say, you know, they went from like 3 or 4 rate cuts, maybe in 2024, to saying maybe one, or some people are speculating none. So let's just say we don't know what kind of like mind manipulation they're working with there. But just from a political standpoint, because you and I have already discussed how, you know, the Fed isn't political per se, but like, let's be honest, you have Joe Biden who desperately wants Americans to believe that the economy is in a good place before the election. So does that at all force the Fed's hands?
Well, it may, and which is kind of interesting why they're talking more tough right now, right? So they've gotten all the, I mean, coming into this year, I think that we had like 6 rate cuts priced in. And I believe after today's announcement, I think they're only looking at 1, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think the Fed would like to be as accommodative as they possibly can going into the election. To be fair to them, that is a posture they've taken during most elections. I don't want to be the conspiratorial guy, but I just have a very strong feeling if we got an honest poll of the FOMC, they'd probably be leaning very hard to one candidate and not the other.
Which one, Zach? Which one?
Oh, who knows? Brandy, I mean, it's hard to say, right?
Yeah.
The one that has a more difficult time expressing himself, let's put it that way.
Oh, I have no idea who that could be. Got it. Yeah, got it. Yeah, no idea at all. Speaking of inflation, if you want to make sure that your retirement portfolio can keep up with inflation, Zach is having another one of his free Know Your Risk webinars on June 27th at 3:30 p.m. You just go to knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. It'll pop up on your screen. You can register. No obligation, just a good learning opportunity, especially if you're getting close to retirement with all this inflation. You want to make sure that what you've saved is going to still give you the kind of retirement that you were hoping for. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, before we get to our daily subscriber show poll, can I read you, Nicole, the 2 funniest comments on our feed today?
Certainly.
It was about, where'd they go? Oh, here it is. It was about Bob Ferguson asking the Secretary of State to break the law. Egamorph says, Bob makes corn pop look like a saint. And then Matt says, Corn Pop was a bad dude and he ran with some bad boys. Sorry, I thought it was funny. It gave me a good chuckle. Okay. All right, in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, since I know for a fact that you guys are far smarter and more honest than Dow Constantine, I asked you the question that he refuses to answer with integrity. What do you believe is the largest contributor to homelessness in Washington State? Drug addiction? Mental illness, or as Dow Constantine suggests, it is simply the cost of housing. Housing is just too dang expensive. As I suspected, many of you are true zero people on Patreon. Mm-hmm. Zero people said cost of housing. I might have looked up those accounts and canceled them myself. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't cancel your account for disagreeing with me. But vast majority of people saying drug addiction. Sydney says, although it's hard to be sure what comes first, the mental illness or the drugs, because you see some of them walking around like zombies or naked or something. So I think that there's some people who drug addiction has spiraled into mental illness for sure. Tasha says, I chose mental health issues because often it is co-occurring with drug addiction, but drugs often are a result of the mental illness issues. I mean, that was the case for my dad. He was bipolar. He had undiagnosed bipolar, but I think for us it was pretty clear what was going on. And like, when he was not having a mental health episode, great dad. When he was, alcoholic, using drugs, crazy person. So Slim Jakey, how about mental illness caused from drug addiction? Joan, they're street people. They don't want a place to live unless they can do their drugs and alcohol. And look, again, Dow Constantine is completely making that up. He's manufacturing it. It's just a lie. It flies in the face of common sense and what we see with our very own two eyeballs. But one of the things I'll say is, remember a couple months ago, we did a story on the fact that the affordable housing providers also have a crisis of unpaid rent. So even when you have an affordable housing unit that is a fraction of the cost that it would be if it weren't designated in that way, people still aren't paying rent. And sometimes there are people who are in those. We've seen Andrea Suarez with video of someone who got into one of these units and then just filled it with trash and were doing drugs in there just like it was a tent, because no one addressed the underlying issues why they were living on the streets. It wasn't just, oh, well, they just didn't have a roof over their head. Even when they had a roof over their head, they're still dealing with the same damn problems. Let's see. Bob on Locals. Drug addiction and mental illness are two of the big reasons, but the biggest is that we've allowed it to happen. Yeah, all of this, the policies that have contributed to this. Not one person on Locals, Patreon, or X chose cost of housing. Dow, that tells me Dow's not a subscriber. Because if Dow were a subscriber, we would have at least had one.
At least one.
Select cost of housing. It's just insane. It's mental. Okay, more comments. Matt Gilbert with a $5 super chat. Apparently it was a late one and we never see Matt Gilbert's super chats.
For some reason.
Talking about the mural of Thor, which many of you have messaged to tell me is not Greek. It's Nordic. I apologize. Apparently this mural hit a Thor spot with some people. Get it? Sore spot.
Oh, I get
Thor
it.
Thor. He said, also, Thor is Norse, not Greek. I'm sorry. It's Jason Rance's fault. Jason's article said Greek. Did it not?
Oh, probably
I blame
not.
Jason.
It was probably just us talking about the mythology. So
I swear Jason's article said Greek god.
Okay, I'm going to look it up.
You look it up, because I want to blame Jason instead of taking personal responsibility for what comes out of my mouth. Nobody else does. Why do I have to? Sally says, with $5 super chat, Dow is an asshat with two Z's. Here's money for the swear jar. She said that the super chat wouldn't take a swear word, so she had to change it. Let me see. Matt Holm. This is so wrong. The good old boys protecting the good old boys only in Washington State. So sad, and is why we have to keep them in check. Yeah. I mean, the Bar Association. You don't think Bobby Sue's got some friends over at the bar, Nicole?
Bobby Sue.
Whose fault? My fault or Jason's?
No, Jason says Norse.
No. Did you look at the thing?
Yesterday. Mean, he may have changed it. Maybe he changed it.
So stupid. I really don't want to be wrong. Okay, fine. It's fine. No, it's fine. It's fine. Shelly Sanders says on Dow Constantine, vote in clowns and get the circus. True.
Oh, we did.
Let me see. Krista M on Dow Constantine's We Deliver comment. She goes, deliver what? More issues to the residents of Washington? Delivering us a load of crap. Alicia says, the sickest and saddest part is people actually believe this stuff. How have they been so brainwashed? It's beyond me. country guy. What about the hotels that were supposed to house the homeless? Did it fix things? Yeah, that was his end all be all. A lot of them are empty. Dow, what's going on? That doesn't make any sense. Right. You're saying it's a lack of patriotic kid getting kicked out of a Catholic school in California for being too Trumpian. Y says, so because Trump used the phrase make America great again, now promising to make anything great again is a horrible speech. These grown-ups need to grow up. That would be a good sanity check for today. But lucky for you, I have another one. Let's see. So we know that Bob Ferguson, anything else, Nicole?
Oh, no. Sorry. I didn't know if you were moving on or
you see how a couple more. It was such a seamless transition.
And then I blew it. Yeah. And
then you blew it. But that's okay. That's all right. All right. In our closing sanity check today, Eric Adams does what Governor Inslee and Bob Ferguson could not. Let's get to it. All right, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, as much as he has some shortfalls and can be ideological at times, he is giving a very strong example of what it looks like when a leader speaks out about hateful conduct like the anti-Semitism that we have been seeing all across the country.
My fellow New Yorkers, in this country, we must always protect the right to free speech. But I have a moral obligation to speak out when the messages that some New Yorkers are sharing go beyond the pale. Yesterday, outside an exhibit in Lower Manhattan commemorating those massacred at the Nova Music Festival on October 7th, protesters waved Hezbollah and Hamas flags. At other protests, they carried banners reading, "Long live October 7th." And one person even yelled, "He wishes," a quote, "Hitler was still here. He would have wiped all of you out." These are reprehensible and vile comments. I and every New Yorker who stands for peace stand united against them. I always speak up for what's right, and what we saw last night was wrong.
That is how you do that. I hope Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson were paying attention. That's your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We will see subscribers coming up on the Sunday show, Sundays with Subscribers. If you have not become a subscriber already, you can do so by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month to support this mission and this movement to restore a little sanity to this great state of ours. See non-subscribers on the live show on Monday at noon. Farewell.